For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, we just wanted to give you a little info before you get to the episode. We got to talking so much for this episode that we ended up having to make two episodes. So you're going to hear the first half of our conversation on this episode, and then next time we drop an episode, you'll hear the second half. Hopefully you enjoy.
Hey, talk to me about the production value of this Kodiak Shack podcast right now.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Kodiak Shack podcast. Today we have Rowdy Little and Drago Walters back on the podcast. We're gonna have the bros here. We're gonna solve the world's problems today, because we used to do this many times back in New Mexico, having our Scotch nights, which we talked about. We won't get into too much detail. You know, that's a secret, bro, foreign. But thank you everybody for listening to the podcast and supporting the podcast, reaching out. So tell your friends, like, share, subscribe. Even though Tron Bloom told me people already know, like, share, subscribe. So why are you telling people? Classic briefing things twice. But either way, thank you guys for being back, and get yourself a Kodiak Shack hat. Anybody out there who has a Kodiak Shack hat, send me pictures. I'll post them on our social media so we can show people how much awesome stuff is happening. So Rowdy, Drago, thank you for being here. Rowdy, tell us about yourself. It's not a trap.
No, it's a trap. It's always a trap. So I flew, went through Navy training, so that was cool, T-34s. Then up to Vance, where I got stuck in purgatory as a T-6 Fate, which was awesome. It was actually a good time. And then Vipers for just about 10 years, and then now back teaching IFF here at Columbus. So basically the wife wanted to come home, so we did. It's been great.
There you go. Yep, that's the way to do it. And Drago, you introduced yourself last time, but for those who didn't hear it or want to hear it again, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, Drago Walters. I was also T-34s out at Whiting Field, went to Vance, also did some times the T-38 FAPE there, and then first class of F-16s through Holloman, straight to Misawa, straight to Wick, and then back to Holloman, where all roads do lead. And then I joined the Air National Guard, and I'm up here at the Buckley Air National Guard in Colorado.
Awesome. So Drago and I, we crossed paths in Misawa at our first assignments, our first CAF assignments, and then back at Holloman. And then Rowdy and I, we all three crossed paths back at Holloman, so we hung out there a lot. So what everyone here doesn't know is Drago and Rowdy are some of the best instructor pilots I've ever worked with. Drago is a killer patch, and Rowdy, I think, is the most decorated IP of the class instructor pilot. So, Rowdy, can you kind of explain there's a tenure here, too, all the instructor pilots of the class and what that means to receive those. And if you don't do it good, we'll add in.
Yeah. let's see. Well, you got the standard awards, right? So Hammer Award, you've got the Santa Claus Award. So Hammer for whoever grazed the hardest. Typically, people don't want to fly with the Hammer. And then you've got the Santa Claus, so you've got a passion no matter what. Then typically there's the best IP award they give out from there. It's usually the one they want to fly with, they learn the most from, and things of that nature. And speaking with one of our buddies back at Holloman, you got, what was it, Fighter Pilot of the Year for AATC. He asked me, he was like, well, what about you getting all these best IP awards? Like, what's the deal? And I was like, well, I think it's just because I truly care about the students and really try to get in their ear loop and put them in the best state of learning that they can possibly be in. So get them comfortable, make them talk, you know, and it seems to have worked well from vape days all the way to now. So,
yeah. And I have to say, like, the, what you can see, and not to discredit people who in the military get awards for quarterly awards, annual awards, Air Force level awards. A lot of that is politicking, though. A lot of that is this person's trying to go to the school. They're trying to take command. They're trying to do something. So they get these Air Force level awards handed to them because they're on some sort of path. And again, that person's doing a ton of hard work, but the guy who's like, hey, I'm going to the airlines, I'm going to the guard, that person can work harder than the person who got the annual award. And turns out they don't get that annual award anymore. But what is unblemished is the student IP of the class award, because that is literally all the students sit down, whether it's IFF, what Rowdy is doing now and where he's still getting IP of the classes, or when he was back at Holloman getting IP of the classes. Each class sits down together and says, who was everyone's favorite IP? Over and over again, it was Rowdy, whether it was in the Viper or in the 38. So that just shows solid instruction, solid dude. So good work on that, Rowdy.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Drago, what do you have to say about Rowdy winning all those awards?
I just love it, man. Rowdy's a great dude. And that's how you know. You got to be a good pilot to be able to teach it. But you guys heard my spiel before. Most of being a good IP is realizing that you're in the service industry, you know? And make that about the guy across the table. And you can't teach somebody that. So Rowdy's always been able to do it, and he's been awesome his whole life. But it's cool that he's still awesome, because a lot of us get salty, right? Like I really like getting older and just being salty, and every once in a while I just want to tell a kid to shut up and make popcorn, you know? But Rowdy's still fighting a good fight. And I admire that, man. It's awesome. You know, to have done that and still be in that headspace from being a FAPE to an F-16 IP for a long time to now an IFF IP the whole time. Like, those are different spaces to be able to do it. And those moves, you know, they can change who you are and, like, what you care about. And they just never, like, Rowdy never changed, man. He just cares about other people, and he just does the best he can for them. And that's why he's a great IP. Also, he's a pretty good pilot. Talk that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's secondary for sure.
Yeah. and one thing that people probably don't realize, as you get older in your career, you normally, in most people's cases, you do less flying. You spend more time on your office job. You spend more time being wing XP, which I don't even know what that job is. But
it's my current job.
There you go. All right. Drago can explain. But
I'm lost what up. Happens?
Yeah. What happens to every fighter pilot is as they get older, they become a major, even a lieutenant colonel. Your job is, you know, it starts 90-10 flying everything else. Then it goes 80-20, 50-50, and then it starts inverting to where your everything else is taking more time than the flying. But to Rowdy's credit, he was wing XP, he was a DO, and somehow he would fly 3, 4, 5 times a week. I argue that it's that he was never soft or top three qualled, but that's, you know, right. That's neither here nor there.
Hey, we can pull those stats though. We can pull those stats.
That's right. Yeah. Flying the wings off of those jets. But he's there for the students. So I was always impressed that Rowdy could never let the ground game get in the way of the flying job. And it sounds like it's not at IFF either.
No. So I set out at the start of my career. I was like, I want to fly, and that's my job. And I have had a few people at those various positions that you just talked about. They're like, Rowdy, we haven't seen you like all week. And I just point to my chest. I'm like, you see these? You see these wings? Like, this is my job. This is a secondary duty that I'm doing. You know, whether it's DO, XP, whatever it was. I was like, I am here to fly jets. And I was able to finagle that here as well. Because I know showing up as a 11F, you know, 05 to a pilot training base, like, I've got to find some corner to hide in. You can't really do that. So I was able to find it, though, with the fighter bomber fundamentals stuff, because once again, it's syllabus development. Like, it's not like a near-term fire. It's things that I was able to be like, essentially, that's the first time I've ever, I guess you could say, interviewed for a job, because I heard about that was kind of coming on board. You know, this Task Force 14 type thing going on. And I was like, that sounds a lot like what we did in the training squadron, as far as maybe one or two meetings a month. Other than that, I could fly as much as I want and then just work around it, which I've done my whole career. And so I went to Air Jones, IFF squadron commander, basically within a month of me getting to IFF, and I was like, I want this job. Here's my pedigree, you know, F-16 bed down at Holloman, all this other stuff, buildings, all the syllabuses that we did, syllabi, there in the training squadron. I was like, this is it. And so, yeah, it's continued. And now, actually, so obviously the T-38, much shorter flight time. The fights are obviously a lot more simple, so fly debrief, all that stuff is shorter. So I double turned 3 days last week and was scheduled for my 8th flight of the week on Friday, and then maintenance broke, right? So we didn't have enough jets. So I did not fly that 8th sortie. So I have continued the flying, and I've got 4 more years to get to 20, and I think I can hopefully hide in this position until I exit the scene, you know?
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, that's like Misawa status, like hot pitting 4 days a week type thing. But yeah, I mean, especially at IFF, I felt like that was the, you know, T-38s guys are double, triple turning, because the brief debrief was like almost non-existent. But IFF, you actually have instructional briefs, you two tactics, you have an instructional debrief about the tactics. So the fact that you're able to do both of those, or like do all of that and fly a second sortie, is respectable. How's everybody's fitness going out there?
Oh, it's good.
That's good. So pound for pound.
Those macros are tight, Rowdy.
Yeah.
They are. So, you
get those macros tight.
Well, I'd say go, Vader. What were we saying?
Oh, well, I was going to say, so right here, so Drago, we talked to Drago about kind of working out and the human performance side of flying jets. So Drago and Rowdy are both extremely strong dudes. I think Rowdy may be pound for pound the strongest like fighter pilot I know, because he's rocking like what 169 pounds, something like that.
Oh, dripping wet, dude, with a wool sweater on.
Well, I was gonna say I do have the data, bod pod data, to kind of show something that's pretty cool. Like back in 2020, you know, like when I did, I was down to 154 pounds and 7% body fat. But I was too small, so I was like, oh, since then, so the past 3 years, I've been trying to build muscle, and from my fat-free muscle mass back then to my fat-free muscle mass now, or really body mass, you could say that, it's gone up over 10 pounds in 3 years, which I would say isn't bad for someone of my age.
Yeah, so, and first guy ever to do a clean bulk. Yeah.
Yeah. That did not happen. I got up to 184, 185 this past March. And I was like, I went too far.
Yeah. Well, and Rowdy, what would you say? So I know not to talk about your, you know, injuries and stuff, but flying jets beats you up, you know, beat up your back, your neck, all that. How has your fitness kind of helped, you know, keep you ready to fight and keep fighting?
Yeah, I think it's a huge portion of what we do in this whole, OHWS, it sounds so much better than CRAFT, right? So AETC, it's CRAFT. I don't even know what it stands for, but it's Optimization of the Human Weapon System per ACC, right? And getting the strength coaches, physical therapy guys in there at the start for these guys that are, you know, starting their career is awesome. And if we had that back in the day, I think it would have helped a lot. First time I got in a F-15, actually, to get a flight, you know, they handed me a G-suit, and they say, wherever the bladder fills up, just push back with your muscles. That was the training, right? and then pretty much they talk to you about the ADSM once you get into pilot training and all that stuff. But nothing really about like stretching before the flight, stretching in EOR, you know, all these things that I do now. And I tell the dudes in IFL, because we'll get to the T-38 and how it's terrible. I don't know how to say that. We'll say this. It is past its prime. Let's say that. And it's not easy to fly that airplane, much less fight in it, and especially like for visibility purposes, you know, looking backwards for defensive BFM and all that stuff. So I even tell the students, like, I'm like, dude, take your time in EOR. Like, literally stretch. I want you to look and see if you can see the opposite side of the rudder, and then do it on both sides, playing football, right? Stretch out your neck, get all that stuff done in the EOR. I know the flight is going to be mad at you because you haven't turned your light on yet, so you're not ready to go. I was like, don't worry about that. Like, literally make sure your body's good. Then right before the GX, do the same thing, and you'd be surprised at how much better it goes. So, like, just being fit in general, back to your initial point, I think definitely helps significantly. And something that I found after I did hurt my back was the diet side of the house, which is, and it makes total sense, right? You are what you eat and all that. But I had never really looked at it from macros or really just like what I was actually eating. I was just like, eat meat, I'll be good. And so that portion is cool. So we have dietitians here at Columbus that work with the students. So it's pretty cool. And I think it's great that the Air Force is finally taking that type of an approach. Because it is the key to longevity and just to actually being able to do it.
Yeah, and to everybody out there, I was talking to a flight physiologist at Luke, and she was like, if you don't stretch and warm up and then you go to do BFM, you're effectively like stepping up to do a one rep max with no warm up. You're just like, all right, let's see how this works. So even some amount of stretching and warm up is going to get you ready. Drago, how's the Block 30 treating you in the old BFM department?
I haven't done it in a while, man. I just got back from getting my ATP, so I'll tell you, when the cat says, you know, pretty, I'll be all right. It's fun. It's clean Viper BFM. When we go to a fight in Block 30s, we clean them off, so we got nothing on. So you're 9Gs, and we'll give you 9Gs. And, you've heard me talk about the Block 30. I think it's the best one. Nobody talks about that, but I think you can kill anything in a Block 30. And it'll hurt you, but you just, I don't know, man, you just, you know, drink IPAs and do squats and you'd be all right. Like,
yeah.
I'm not crazy scientific about it, but I'm not going to write a book on my G prep program, but that works for me, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, it's nice to hear a patch actually say that the Block 30 is the best. It's Block 30. I've always said it, but I'm not a patch.
Yeah. Dude, anyway, just it's nice, man. Like you take the clean Block 30 out there and you just feel like, you feel like the angel of death, man, but it'll hurt you. If you go and like the stuff that you can get away with, like certainly in a Block 42, like we had a Holland, man, it's a Prius, you know, but even like in a Block 40, you can maybe get away with like being a little bit dehydrated or you gotta prep, you know, you gotta do the stretching thing. If you want the longevity out of it, you have to be honest about the G's that day in the Block 30, like it'll put you to sleep, you know, and in the Block 30s in the guard don't have AG cast. So like, that's all you got. You get one shot at it, you know? But I do. I'm not as you, Vader. You know, I'm not as big a mobility and dietitian as you guys are. I'm just doing my best.
Yeah. Well, see, Drago is just like sheer force of will for most things he achieves in his life. Like he'll pick it up because he will pick it up.
Well, that's right, man. You just flex his G suit, just yell through your G staring, man. You know. Both those in the HUD and shoot him till he's dead. Like, what are we doing? Yeah, that's
right. And to give some context for everybody listening. So the F-16s that the U.S. owns, so some of our oldest jets are the Block 30s. So they revamped the F-16 when they went to the Block 40s and Block 50s and 52s. Then the 30 to the 40 and 50 type have structural differences, is my understanding. So the gear is slightly different. The weight of the aircraft is slightly different. The operating system is different. But when you're talking BFM, the flight controls are also different. So think analog versus digital between 30 and 40 and 50. And then you get into the 40s and 50s, and then they have different motors between 40, 42, 50, 52. So the Block 30 is the lightest. And if you have the big mouth Block 30, it has the same motor as the 40. Correct me if I'm wrong. But it's a lighter jet with an analog flickus. So what it means is you can rip around a little bit more aggressively than the 40 or the 50 will allow, even though the 50 has more thrust, but it also has more weight to drag around. So that's what... It's impressive. I mean, hearing stories about, you know, the Block 30s and my squadron went out to Tyndall for a checker flag and they fought Block 50s in BFM, but the Block 30s were bagged up, so they didn't get a really BFM with them. But they said the Block 50s were doing all right, you know, holding their own. So yeah. It's good. It's good to see the Viper.
That's a way to say that.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. No, they the 55th apparently they were handling their business, which was good. In long range air to air and in within visual range maneuvering. So
I think they got some nieces on those jets now, man. On those active duty jets. So good for them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they're probably doing like combined ops, like back in the day, the C model, where it's probably like a couple ESAs and a couple Mexican radars in there. The Drago, Rowdy sent to our group chat before this. I know, you know, there's probably rules on what you're supposed to and not supposed to talk about on like prior to the episode that everybody gets to hear. But Rowdy sent a picture of a bird strike in a T-38 the other day. So Drago, do you ever have a bird strike in any of the jets you've flown?
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, there was a terrible story when I was, you know, when we were bird lawnmowers in Malaysia, we all had bird strikes and we just didn't know until we landed. Right, we were the bash program. Just they let the U.S. guys take off first. But I hit a bird on a low level, in a T-38. Like it's very similar to the one that like went through the canopy. You know, it wasn't like pterodactyl big, but it was a pretty big bird, and then we had to climb, and it was like tough to see outside of the top of it. And then we just came back and landed. And I was in the back seat, so it was my visibility was better from the back seat because the kid up front was like, he wasn't freaking out. He was just like, hey man, we hit a giant bird. And I was like, yeah, dude, I can't tell, I can't see anything. And then I hit a couple in Randolph. I hit a couple on takeoff, like a flock of them, like four little sparrows or whatever.
But the Rowdy, what about you? You didn't hit that bird, right? That was somebody else scaring it.
That was somebody in the 50th to the graduate pilot training, as they call it these days. If y'all didn't know, T-38. Oh.
Yeah, because they already have wings, right?
Get their wings out of T-6s now. But yeah, I've hit quite a few birds. Probably the two most fun ones were at Fort Worth. Both coming back into the pattern. This one, I was number two both days. And this time we're at the VFR entry point, and I'm looking over at flight lead to make sure I'm in position for tactical and do tac initial. We're not quite there yet, VFR entry point, and I look forward and I see this massive like crane or something, and it just nails the radome like on the front left side. So much so that, you know, like in the Viper, we're reclined, right? So our legs are kind of out in front of us. My left leg actually came up to my chest. Like boom, like this. Like I heard it, I felt it. I immediately get an air data computer light, so ADC light, the combined air data computer, ADC light. I get a Flickus light. Like everything's freaking out. It's from the flight control system because I literally like broke the AOA gate, you know, AOA probe on the left side. So I just told the flight, I was like, dude, I'm going to a 5 mile straight and I'm landing this sucker. So I just land, we taxi back in, you know, I shut down. Lo and behold, that crane had actually gone down the intake. So there's this nice, long, just blood stain, you know, circular kind of motion going into the engine itself. You go around to the nozzle on the back and you look at the burner can, right? Nothing but feathers. So it just speaks, like I don't even know if, I would assume burner would have worked, but no cough from that. The GE100 just ate that bird, spit it out. And I was worried about the flight control, you know, stuff. The engine, not even a cough. It was awesome. And then another one coming up, Tackinish, we'd actually made the turn, and I look forward and I see this big like black bird just go, like I see the whites of his eyes as he's like trying to dive to get out of the way. I throw my hand up in front like this and I roll the stick, so I kind of roll up to about 90 degrees angle bank, bam, I take it on station one. And I roll back out and I look over there and I just see this big wing and just going, just hanging out, like stuck between the whirl and the wing. And I was like, hey, one, I hit a bird. And he's like, you okay? I was like, yeah, I'm going to land. So landed from that. But that one was pretty funny.
Yeah, see, your Viz lookout is solid. I had no idea I hit a bird. The only time that I can think of having hit a bird was in Malaysia. And they weren't messing around. The crazy thing was we took off and landed in a torrential downpour. I mean, like, It was like we were in some sort of hurricane or typhoon, and we taxi out and take off with no visibility because it's active duty and that's just what you do. We come back and land, and Slick, who was the safety officer in the squadron, was like, hey, like walks in the debrief, hey, you hit a bird. And I was like, when? Like, how? Like, was a bird flying in like 40 mile an hour gusts in like hard rain? But sure enough, apparently hit a bird. So, oh man. But yeah, luckily we have good motors and they just keep on plugging along, you know?
Yeah.
How's
the, you heard about the ejection. You heard about the ejection we had here, right? Like back in, it was December.
No.
They're going to Sea Ray. They're going to our range and they're down about 3,000. It might have been 3,500 feet, we'll say, and push it up. They basically took birds down both engines and was trying to figure it out for a while, and it hit the canopy, right? So it actually cracked the canopy. So the dude can't see. It's funny, dude, he flies for Delta. He's one of our reservists. This is his first flight back in like a month, right? So he's like trying to start the engines, and he's just slowly descending and couldn't get it. So he just eventually was like, hey, two, I'm punching out. And so he pulled it and floated down into the trees. And the T-38 engines, right? So they're turbojets, right? And they're tiny. So like any small little bird goes down that thing, they're like, we're done. You're like, they just don't work. It's not like the GE-100 or any of the ones we had in the Viper. It's a little more scary.
Yeah. No, it's that I always appreciate the Viper motor. Well, and the C model motor, even though the 220 is the C model motor, which was my least appreciated Viper motor. Turns out when you have two of them, the thrust works out a little bit better, but man, that Block 42 at altitude, or at least at a higher elevation takeoff, was sporty sometimes on those hot days.
Yeah.
How's the state of the student right now, guys?
Well, in IFF, I would say it's good. So taught at the T6 level, came in IP in the Viper and taught the CAF at Kunsan, and then taught with B course at Holland for 3.5 years. And so IFF is really the only thing I haven't taught, you know? And it's interesting because of the dynamics that kind of has been IFF and then like kind of what I'm trying to make it. But as far as it's a screening program, and some people can take that to an extreme, which usually means the students can sometimes, like they're not listening, right? They're like, I want to keep my nugget down. I want to pass this ride and get on to the next airplane, right? So I've tried to open that up a little bit and try to let them have a little bit more fun in IFF. And most of the IPs there, we have a great IP cadre at the 49th is awesome. So that is really good IP cadre. But all the students, what I was trying to get to is like the first time they've ever tried to use an airplane as a weapon, right? Is IFF. So they've come from UPT where they're takeoff and land, flight instrument approach, stall is bad, right? And then they come to us and we're like, I need you to perform a jink, which is an accelerated stall to get out of the way of bullets or you're gonna die. And then I need you to rate at your max rate. So I need you to be within half a G of your over G potential. You live in the single rate beeper in IFF or you're stalling the jet. You are max performing this thing because it is now a weapon. So their eyes are boom. Right? Because they're like, we're doing all the stuff they told us not to do in pilot training. It's like, yeah, well, do you want to live and do you want to kill somebody? Well, this is how it works. So it's definitely an interesting environment to teach in. And I think it's good. I think they really do want to learn, at least what I see.
That's good. Drago, how are you seeing the absorption over at Buckley?
They're fine. We get TFI kids and we're so well-resourced to give them extra flights and blue looks because that's all they need to get with all the experience we have in the guard, that they would have to be real bad for us to notice that. And I think that they can be, you can get a guy who like on paper looks like he's below average. And as long as his attitude is right and he is prepared and he is willing to learn, you can teach him just about anything by him being here. But I think that's very specific to the resources we have in the guard. Now, like the jets will hurt, right? But we got sims here too, so they can hop in a sim whenever they want and they can get whatever training they want. I think that we'll always have guys that progress slower than they do on active duty just because the pace of life in the guard is just not what it is. And the active duty guys that went guard will have that context, and nobody else wears it, so it won't matter. We'll still give them the quals at the same time. We'll still, you know, they'll still progress.
You're cutting out again, Drago.
Sorry.
It seems like your mic just kind of like mutes out a little bit after a while.
Is this helping at all?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Oh, look at that. All right. So I think as long as they're good, like attitude wise, we can do pretty much anything with them, man. You know?
Yeah. No, I dig it. And I think how's the, cause IFF is kind of where, well, what do you guys think? Do you guys think IFF is where you kind of instill that in them into being prepared to enter the fighter world?
Well, it kind of has to be because the fact that there are no fighter pilots in T-38s anymore.
Yeah.
Now, that's changing over the past year, you know, so we've gotten at least, I think we've got five or six in the 50th now that are 11F guys, most of them are single assignment dudes, and they're helping change that, and it's not a dig on non-fighter pilots. It's just, you're not a fighter pilot, therefore, how are you going to instill a fighter pilot ethos into students if you never did that, right? So it's not, I'm not trying to poo-poo on those guys, it's just, if you didn't know, I didn't really know this, but in IFF, so like when we finish our upgrade, like we keep our 11F. Like we are still 11Fs teaching at IFF as an AFSC, Air Force something code.
Close
enough. Yeah. But anyway, so we're an 11F. But in the 50th, after they go through PIT, so pilot instructor training down at Randolph, they are 11Ks. So they don't even retain, I mean, obviously their core AFSC stays the same, but they are not even, they don't have their 11F, which is why you can send anybody back there as long as they've been through T-38 training. So yes, I would say IFF is the first time they see it, mainly due to the fact that they've never seen a fighter pilot before IFF, you know, which they're trying to change. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, Drago, that's how I felt it was when I went through IFF, was that was like, hey, this is where we teach you to be a fighter pilot. Like, Drago, do you have that same experience kind of obviously being a FAPE and then going through IFF after?
I think so, but I think there was goodness in being exposed to the type of, you know, feedback and the type of expectation and the type of messaging you get from, like, a fighter pilot type dude. You know, there's, like, bookends to it, but guys, it's just a different way of, like, treating people and learning, and some of it's good and some of it's a little bit more aggressive than other communities, and that just is what it is. So I thought there was a lot of goodness in the fact that there was a lot of 11Fs in the UPT halls when I was there, because almost nobody wore that too hard when they were flying T-38s and just teaching you how to land. But it was nice to be exposed to those guys, to get those stories, to have them teach you how to, like, prepare and learn and accept information and how to wear your humility, but like not have it like bleed over to the flight where you felt like you were, you know, subservient to a guy. You were still doing the best you could. You just like didn't come back and you weren't like arrogant about it. And that's good to learn before you get to IFF, so you know like what the expectation is on how to be. And the first time you get a fighter pilot debrief is less emotional, you know, because that'll separate some dudes, man. But I did feel like they turned it on at IFF, but I also felt it was different for me because I've been exposed to those guys for a long time. But I think it certainly would be much more jarring to go through UPT with no fighter presence and then show up at IFF. But it's recoverable, you know, as long as the dudes like Rowdy understand that's what's happening, and they, you know, and they meter their expectations appropriately.
Well, and I think I had a good experience in IFF where it was exactly that. They set that tone and that standard for the expectation, and that it was going to be, you were going to meet it or you were going to see it again. And that's okay. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. It's the fact that it's okay to fail, man. Like that, I feel like failure is a lot more prevalent in the fighter community, and it's not socially taboo, man. Like it's a very difficult job. And it's both right and correct that if you don't like meet the benchmark that like you're not good enough and then you fail, and it becomes less emotional and more about professionalism. Like you shouldn't want to pass if you're not good enough to do the thing. So let's see that again. And as soon as you can get the person receiving the instruction to understand that, like that's what it has to be. You have to be okay with failure. And that, honestly, we talked about it, but that's what makes you an honest broker about whether or not you can do something. you know, and that's service wide, certainly, right? But you see, like, when you work with other people, even at like the operations center, Rowdy, and they just like are not used to not being able to do something, they say yes to everything. Can you do this? Like, yes. And they overpromise what they can do. And when you're used to going into a, you know, whatever missionized scenario you have, and just getting rolled and being like, well, we can't do that, you know? That makes you, like, later on, that makes you, when you're in charge of something else that maybe doesn't even pertain to flying, really comfortable when somebody's like, hey, can you do this thing? And you just look at it, and, you know, you just quantifiably, you're like, no, we don't have enough slits. And you just say it. You're like, hey, we can't do this thing. And I think that people appreciate that a lot more. I don't say you don't necessarily learn that as a fighter pilot, but you certainly, like, as a fighter pilot only, like, other people learn that too, but you certainly are reminded that much more frequently. In the fighter industry.
Yeah, fighter pilot is an attitude mindset, and if they have the right mindset, we can get them through. And being okay with failure is, like, you have to be, because you're gonna fail a lot. And then being honest about what you can do is another big part, because it's gonna show as soon as you get out there and fight. And then also just the single seat mentality, right? Of like, speak up, say something, don't keep a secret. Right, because I don't know what's going on in your jet because we're in different airplanes, and that's awesome, you know. So you have to tell me certain things, right? So I think all that can come from a good attitude, and if they are exposed to it earlier, which is the current goal, right? It sucks for the dudes. I hate the fact that they have one assignment now, you know, in the CAF, now they're teaching 38s again. But it's a necessary evil. Like, it's a bill that I think we have to pay if we want good fighter pilots, like, at least the discipline starting early. You know, which we kind of been missing over the past, you know, 6 to 9 years, you know, based on the fact that there are no fighter pilots there. And they are just, it's a shock when they start at IFF and they're like, what is this? You know.
And I don't want to oversell that, because I don't think fighter pilots are the only ones that are capable of instilling that discipline. And I think there's a lot of people that are not fighter qualified at UPT right now doing, like, really good work. But what you can do is you can provide the right context for it, right? You have credibility when you provide that context because of your life experience. And that's really hard for other people to do, even though they can be, like, really good IPs. Just, they know, and if they wear it appropriately, like, they know that they can't speak to some things, and you need guys that can speak to those things based on life experience. You know? Did you guys hear any of that, or is that an Android phone situation?
We lost half of you there, and it looks like we just lost our host.
No. Dude, it's this app. My phone is nailing it. It's this app.
Is it?
It's Riverside thing. It's BS. What's up, baby?
Hey, he's back.
It was like, hey, no internet connection.
Hey, talk to me about the production value of this Kodiak Shack podcast right now.
It depends on how much spare time I have. But, we'll fix a lot of this in post. That's what we're going to do.
All right, good, man. I'm sorry. I'm just going to hold my phone for an hour. So,
what's that? Dude, your mic is like, it's just giving up.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. It's like it catches like your first sentence or two, and then your mic is just like, whew, I'm getting pretty tired.
On all of it, I'm talking too much. I'll keep it monosyllabic, man. That's my bad.
Nah, it's not even that. It's
almost like Android, the longer you talk, the more it just starts to peter off.
Look, I'm not getting a new phone, so this is what you get. This will be my last time on the Kodiak Shack podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's great. But and one of the things that I think in that what we haven't done, and like Rowdy was saying before I so rudely got kicked out by my own internet, was that we haven't, at the 11F community has not been like footing the bill for the UPT production, like instructors. We have kicked all of that to AMC because AMC had a bunch of extra people. So AMC sent them to UPT and T-38, and we were happy to let them go. Like, cool, fill those spots. I agree. Like, having people in T-38s, even T-6s, depending on if it makes sense for them, to instill some of that or just kind of be able to share that story. Because I didn't even meet a fighter pilot in pilot training until, I guess, one guard guy was an A-4 pilot. So an attack pilot. He was like the guy I could talk to. Everybody else was, you know, heavy pilot or FAPE. So I think there's goodness in the fact that they can have those experiences in T6s, hopefully move on to 38 and have even more of that. So, yeah. What were you going to say, Drago?
No, we lost Rowdy, but we're good.
Yeah. His, Rowdy, you're, we just can't see you, but apparently
this feels just like Scotch Night. This is good.
This is exactly, this is why we never got to the point of solving the problems. We were always very ready to.
You don't know if we did or not, man.
That's true. Yeah, that's because
it's impossible.
I don't remember. Yeah.
Hey, so can y'all see me now, or can you just hear me?
Yeah. No, I got you now. Yeah. Okay. It should all be recording. Riverside will dope it all out, or it won't, and then I just let it ride. Don't worry. The Kodiak Shack podcast OG listeners know that this is par for the course.
All right,
they
cool.
know that we're.
Yeah, we're not like live streaming this, dude. Right? Like we'll be all right.
No, and we're and they know I'm not professional enough to do this any better anyway. So they're recently the Air Force somehow for a 10-day period of time had no money. Do you guys know how that happened?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.